the desire to spend the rest of our lives together, and the desire to get sex on a regular basis. Since Morelli's sex drive makes mine look insignificant, he usually is more frequently in favor of marriage than I am. I suppose it would be most accurate to say we were engaged to be engaged. And that's a comfortable place for us to live, because it's vague enough to absolve Morelli and me of serious marital discussion. Serious marital discussion always leads to a lot of shouting and door slamming.
"Have you been looking at dresses?" Grandma asked. "August don't give us much time. You need a gown, and then there's the flowers and the reception, and you need to reserve the church. Have you asked about the church yet?"
Grandma jumped out of her chair.
"I've got to go call Betty Sajak and Marjorie Swit and tell them the news."
"No, wait," I said. "It's not official."
"What do you mean, not official?" my mother asked.
"Not many people know."
"Like Joe." "How about Joe's granny?" Grandma asked. "Does she know? I wouldn't want to cross Joe's granny. She could put the jinx on things."
"Nobody can put the jinx on things," my mother said. "There's no such thing as a jinx."
Even as she said it, I could see she was fighting back the urge to cross herself.
"And besides," I said, "I don't want a big wedding with a gown and everything. I want a barbecue."
I couldn't believe I was saying this. Bad enough I'd announced my wedding date. Now I had it all planned out. A barbecue? Jeez, it was like I had no control over my mouth. I looked at Joe and mouthed, "Help!" Joe draped an arm around my shoulders and grinned. The silent message was, "Sweetheart, you're on your own with this one."
"Well, it'll be a relief just to see you happily married," my mother said. "Both my girls, happily married." "That reminds me," Grandma said to my mother. "Valerie called last night when you were out at the store, something about taking a trip, but I couldn't figure out what she was saying on account of there was all this yelling going on behind her."
"Who was yelling?"
"I think it must have been the television. Valerie and Stephen never yell. Those two are just the perfect couple. And the girls are such perfect little ladies."
Gag me with a spoon.
"Did she want me to call her back?" my mother asked.
"She didn't say. Something happened and we got cut off."
Grandma sat up straighter in her seat. She had a clear view through the living room to the street, and something caught her attention.
"There's a taxi stopping in front of our house."
Everyone craned their neck to see the taxi. In the Berg, a taxi stopping in front of a house is big entertainment.
"For goodness sakes," Grandma said. "I could swear that's Valerie getting out of the taxi."
We all jumped up and went to the door. Next thing, my sister and her kids swooped into the house. Valerie is 2 years older than me and an inch shorter. We both have curly brown hair, but Valerie's dyed her hair blonde and has it cut short, like Meg Ryan. I guess that's what they do with hair in California. When we were kids, Valerie was vanilla pudding, good grades, and clean white sneakers. And I was chocolate cake, the dog ate my homework, and skin knees. Valerie was married right out of college and immediately got pregnant. Truth is, I'm jealous. I got married and immediately got divorced. Of course, I married a womanizing idiot, and Valerie married a really nice guy. Leave it to Valerie to find Mr. Perfect. My nieces look a lot like Valerie before Valerie did the Meg Ryan thing. Curly brown hair, big brown eyes, skin a shade more Italian than mine. Not much Hungarian made it to Valerie's gene pool, and even less trickled down to her daughters, Angie and Mary Alice. Angie is 9, going on 40, and Mary Alice thinks she's a horse. My mother was flushed and teary, hormones revved, hugging the kids, kissing Valerie.
"I don't believe it," she kept saying. "I don't believe it. This is such a surprise. I had no idea you were coming to visit."
"I called," Valerie said. "Didn't Grandma tell you?"
"I couldn't hear what you were saying," Grandma said. "There was so much noise, and then we got cut off."
"Well, here I am," Valerie said.
"Just in time for dinner," my mother said. "I have a nice pot roast, and there's cake for dessert."
We scrambled to add chairs and plates and extra glasses. We all sat down and passed the pot roast and potatoes and green beans. The dinner immediately elevated to a party, the house feeling filled with holiday. "How long will you be staying with us?" my mother asked.
"Until I can save up enough money to buy a house," Valerie said.
My father's face went pale. My mother was elated.
"You're moving back to New Jersey?"
Valerie selected a single lean piece of beef.
"It seemed like the best thing to do."
"Did Steve get a transfer?" my mother asked.
"Steve isn't coming."
Valerie surgically removed the one smidgen of fat that clung to her meat.
"Steve left me."
So much for the holiday. Morelli was the only one who didn't drop his fork. I glanced over at Morelli and decided he was working hard at not smiling.
"Well, isn't this a pisser?" Grandma said.
"Left you?" my mother repeated. "What do you mean he left you? You and Steve are perfect together."
"I thought so, too. I don't know what went wrong. I thought everything was just fine between us, and then, poof, he's gone."
"Poof?" Grandma said.
"Just like that," Valerie answered. "Poof."
She bit into her lower lip to keep it from trembling. My mother and father and grandmother and I panicked at the trembling lip. We didn't do this sort of emotional display. We did temper and sarcasm. Anything beyond temper and sarcasm was virgin territory. And we certainly didn't know what to make of this from Valerie. Valerie is the ice queen. Not to mention that Valerie's life has always been perfect. This sort of thing just doesn't happen to Valerie. Valerie's eyes got red and teary.
"Could you pass the gravy?"
she asked Grandma Mazur. My mother jumped out of her chair.
"I'll get you some hot from the kitchen."
The kitchen door swung closed behind my mother. There was a shriek and the sound of a dish smashing against the wall. I automatically looked for Bob, but Bob was sleeping under the table. The kitchen door swung open, and my mother calmly walked out with the gravy dish.
"I'm sure this is just temporary," my mother said. "I'm sure Steve will come to his senses."
"I thought we had a good marriage. I made nice meals, and I kept the house nice. I went to the gym so I'd be attractive. I even got my hair cut like Meg Ryan. I don't understand what went wrong."
Valerie has always been the articulate member of the family, always in control. Her friends used to call her Saint Valerie because she always looked serene, like Ronald DeChuch's statue of the Virgin. So here she was with her world crumbling around her, and she wasn't exactly serene, but she wasn't berserk either. Mostly she seemed sad and confused. From my point of view, it was a little weird since when my marriage dissolved, people 3 miles away heard me yelling. And when Dickie and I went into court, I was told there was a point where my head spun round like the kid in The Exorcist. Dickie and I didn't have such a great marriage, but we got our money's worth out of the divorce. I got caught up in the moment and sent Morelli a "men are bastards" look. Morelli's eyes darkened and the hint of a grin tugged at his mouth. He brushed a fingertip along the back of my neck, and heat rushed through my stomach clear to my doodah.
"Jesus," I said.
The smile widened.
"At least you should be okay financially," I said. "Under California law, don't you get half of everything?"
"Half of nothing is nothing," Valerie said. "The house is mortgaged beyond its value, and there's nothing in the bank account because Steve's been shipping our money out to the Caymans. He is such a good businessman. Everyone always says that. It's one of the things I found most attractive in him."
She took a deep breath and cut Angie's meat, and then she cut Mary Alice's meat.
"Child support," I said. "What about child support?"
"In theory, I suppose he should be helping with the girls, but, well, Steve's disappeared. I think he might be in the Caymans with our money."
"That's awful."
"The truth is, Steve ran away with our babysitter."
We all gasped.
"She turned 18 last month," Valerie said. "I gave her a beanie baby for her birthday."
Mary Alice whinnied.
I want some hay. Horses don't eat meat. Horses have to eat hay.
Isn't that cute? Grandma said. Mary Alice still thinks she's a horse.
I'm a man horse,
Mary Alice said.
Don't be a man horse, sweetheart,
Valerie said.
Men are scum.
Some men are okay, Grandma said.
All men are scum,
Valerie said.
Except for Daddy, of course.
No mention of Joe in the exclusion of scumminess.
Man horses can gallop faster than lady horses,
Mary Alice said, and she flicked a spoonful of mashed potatoes at her sister. The potatoes flew past Angie and landed on the floor. Bob lunged out from under the table and ate the potatoes. Valerie frowned at Mary Alice.
It's not polite to flick potatoes.
Yeah, Grandma said. Little ladies don't flick potatoes at their sisters.
I'm not a little lady,
Mary Alice said.
How many times do I have to tell you? I'm a horse.
And she lobbed a handful of potatoes at Grandma. Grandma narrowed her eyes and bounced a green bean off Mary Alice's head.
Grammy hit me with a bean,
Mary Alice yelled.
She hit me with a bean. Make her stop throwing beans at me.
So much for the perfect little ladies. Bob immediately ate the bean.
Stop feeding the dog,
my father said.
I hope you don't mind my coming home like this,
Valerie said.
It's just until I get a job.
We only have one bathroom,
my father said.
I gotta have the bathroom first thing in the morning. 7 o'clock is my time in the bathroom.
It will be wonderful having you and the girls in the house, my mother said. And you can help with Stephanie's wedding. Stephanie and Joe have just set a date.
Valerie choked up again with the red, watery eyes.
Congratulations, she said.
The wedding ceremony of the Tutsi tribe lasts 7 days and ends with the ritualistic piercing of the hymen,
Angie said.
The bride then goes to live with her husband's family.
I saw a special on television about aliens, Grandma said, and they didn't have hymens. They didn't have any parts down there at all.
Do horses have hymens?
Mary Alice wanted to know.
Not man horses, Grandma said.
It's really nice that you're going to get married, Valerie said.
And then Valerie burst into tears. Not sniffling, dainty tears, either. Valerie was doing big, loud, wet sobbing, gulping in air and bellowing out misery. The two little ladies started crying, too, doing open-mouthed wailing like only a kid can pull off. And then my mother was crying, sniffling into her napkin. And Bob was howling, "Oh, oh!"
I'm never going to get married again, Valerie said between sobs. Never, never, never. Marriage is the work of the devil. Men are the Antichrist. I'm going to become a lesbian.
How do you do that? Grandma asked. I always wanted to know. Do you have to wear a fake penis? I saw a TV show once, and the women were wearing these things that were made out of black leather and were shaped like a great big...
Kill me! My mother shouted. Just kill me! I want to die!
My sister and Bob went back to the bawling and howling. Mary Alice whinnied at the top of her lungs, and Angie covered her ears so she couldn't hear.
La 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 la,
Angie sang. My father cleaned his plate and looked around. Where was his coffee? Where was his cake?
You're gonna owe me big time for this one, Morelli whispered in my ear. This is a doggy sex night.
I'm getting a headache, Grandma said. I can't take this racket. Somebody do something. Put the television on. Get the liquor out. Do something.
I heaved myself out of my chair and went into the kitchen and got the cake. As soon as it hit the table, the crying stopped. If we pay attention to anything in this family, it's dessert. Morelli and Bob and I rode home in silence, no one knowing what to say. Morelli pulled into my lot, cut the engine, and turned to me.
August,
he asked, his voice higher than usual, not able to keep out the incredulous.
You want to get married in August?
It just popped out of my mouth. It was all that dying stuff from my mother.
Your family makes my family look like the Brady Bunch.
Are you kidding me? Your grandmother is crazy. She gives people the eye.
It's an Italian thing.
It's a crazy thing. A car swerved into the lot, jerked to a stop, the door opened, and Mooner rolled out onto the pavement. Joe and I hit the pavement at the same time. When we got to Mooner, he dragged himself up to a sitting position. He was holding his head, and blood trickled from between his fingers.
"Hey, dude," Mooner said. "I think I've been shot. I was watching television, and I heard a sound on the front porch, so I turned around and looked, and there was this scary face looking in the window at me. It was this scary old lady with real scary eyes. It was, like, dark, but I could see her through the black glass. And next thing, she had a gun in her hand, and she shot me, and she broke Dougie's window and everything. There should be a law against that sort of thing, dude."
The Mooner lived two blocks from St. Francis Hospital, but he drove past the hospital and came to me for help. Why me? I asked myself. And then I realized I sounded like my mother and gave myself a mental smack in the head. We loaded Mooner back into his car. Joe drove the Mooner to the hospital, and I followed in Joe's truck. 2 hours later, all the medical and police formalities were behind us, and Mooner had a big Band-Aid on his forehead. The bullet had grazed him just above his eyebrow and ricocheted off into Dougie's living room wall. We stood in Dougie's living room and studied the hole in his front window.
"I should have been wearing this super suit," Mooner said. "That would have confounded them, dude."
Joe and I looked at each other.
Confounded, yes, indeed.
"Do you think it's safe for him to stay in his house?" I asked Joe.
"Hard to say what's safe for the Mooner," Joe said. "Amen," Mooner said. "Safety floats on butterfly wings."
"I don't know what the hell that means," Joe said.
"It means safety is elusive, dude."
Joe pulled me aside.
"Maybe we should check him into rehab."
"I heard that, dude. That's a bummer idea. Those people in rehab are weird. They're like real downers. They're all like druggies."
"Well, geez, we wouldn't want to put you in with a bunch of druggies," Joe said.
Mooner nodded.
"Fucking amen."
"I guess he could stay with me for a couple days," I said. Even as I said it, I was regretting it. What was the deal with me today? It was as if my mouth wasn't connected to my brain.
"Wow, you do that for the Mooner? That is so awesome."
Mooner gave me a hug.
"You won't be sorry. I'll be an excellent roommate."
Joe didn't look nearly as happy as the Mooner. Joe had plans for the evening. There'd been that remark at the table about me owing him doggy sex. Probably he'd been teasing, but then maybe not. Hard to tell with men. Maybe it was best to go with the Mooner. I sent Joe a shrug that said, "Hey, what's a girl to do?"
"Okay," Joe said. "Let's lock up and get out of here. You take the Mooner and I'll take Bob."
Mooner and I stood in the hall in front of my apartment. Mooner had a small duffel bag with him that I assumed contained a change of clothes and a full range of drugs. "Okay," I said. "Here's the thing. You're welcome to stay here, but you can't do drugs."
"Dude," Mooner said.
"Are there any drugs in the bag?"
"Hey, what do I look like?"
"You look like a stoner."
"Well, yeah, but that's because you know me."
"Empty the bag on the floor." Mooner dumped the contents of the bag on the floor. I put Mooner's clothes back in the bag, and I confiscated everything else. Pipes and papers and an assortment of controlled substances. I let us into my apartment, flushed the contents of the plastic bags, and tossed the hardware in the trash. "No drugs as long as you live here," I said.
"Hey, that's cool," Mooner said. "The Mooner doesn't actually need drugs. The Mooner is a recreational user."
Uh-huh.
I gave Mooner a pillow and a quilt, and I went to bed. At 4 a.m., I woke up to the television blaring in the living room. I shuffled out in my T-shirt and flannel boxers and squinted at Mooner. "What's going on? Don't you sleep?"
"I usually sleep like a rock. I don't know the deal here. I think it's all, like, too much. I'm feeling bummed, man. You know what I'm saying? Edgy."
"Yeah. Sounds to me like you need a joint."
"It's medicinal, dude. In California, you can get pot by prescription."
"Forget it." I went back to my bedroom, closed and locked the door, and put the pillow over my head. The next time I straggled out, it was 7. Mooner was asleep on the floor, and Saturday morning cartoons were on. I got the coffee machine started, gave Rex some fresh water and food, and dropped a slice of bread into my brand new toaster. The smell of coffee brewing got Mooner to his feet.
"Yo," he said, "what's for breakfast?"
"Toast and coffee."
"Your grandmother would have made me pancakes."
"My grandmother isn't here."
"You're just trying to make it hard on me, man. Probably you've been scarfing down donuts, and all I'm allowed to eat is toast. I'm talking about my rights here."
He wasn't exactly yelling, but he wasn't talking softly either.
"I'm a human being, and I've got rights."
"What rights are you talking about? The right to have pancakes? The right to have donuts?"
"I don't remember."
Oh, boy. He flopped down on the couch.
"This apartment is depressing. It makes me, like, nervous. How can you stand to live here?"
"Do you want coffee or what?"
"Yes, I want coffee, and I want it now."
His voice ratcheted up a notch, definitely yelling now.
"You can't expect me to wait forever for coffee."
I slammed a mug down on the kitchen counter, slopped some coffee in it, and shoved it at Mooner. Then I dialed Morelli. "I need drugs," I said to Morelli. "You have to get me some drugs."
"You mean like antibiotic?"
"No, like marijuana. I flushed all Mooner's drugs down the toilet last night, and now I hate him. He's completely PMS.
"I thought the plan was to dry him out."
"It isn't worth it. I like him better when he's high."
"Hang in there,"
Morelli said, and he hung up.
"This is like bogus coffee, dude," Mooner said. "I need a latte."
"Fine, let's go get a damn latte." I grabbed my bag and keys and shoved Mooner out the door.
"Hey, I need shoes, man,"
Mooner said. I performed an exaggerated eye roll and sighed really loudly while Mooner grumped back into the apartment to get his shoes. Great. I wasn't even strung out. And now I was PMSing too. Chapter 5. Sitting in a coffee house, leisurely sipping a latte wasn't on my morning schedule, so I opted for the McDonald's drive-thru, where the breakfast menu listed French vanilla lattes and pancakes. They weren't grandma-caliber pancakes, but they weren't bad either, and they were easier to come by. The sky was overcast, threatening rain. No surprise there. Rain is de rigueur for Jersey in April. Steady gray drizzle that encourages statewide bad hair and couch potato mentality. In school, they used to teach us that April showers bring May flowers. April showers also bring 12-car pileups on the Jersey Turnpike and swollen, snot-clogged sinuses. The upside to this is that we frequently have reason to shop for new cars in Jersey, and we're recognized worldwide for our distinctive nasal version of the English language. "So how's your head?" I asked Mooner on the way home.
"Filled with latte. My head is mellow, dude."
"No, I mean, how are the 12 stitches you have in your head?" Mooner felt along the band-aid.
"Feels okay."
He sat for a moment with his lips slightly parted and his eyes searching the back recesses of his mind, and then a light flicked on.
Yeah, he said. "I was shot by this scary old lady."
That's the good part about smoking pot all your life. No short-term memory. Something horrible happens to you, and 10 minutes later, you can't remember a thing. Of course, that's also the bad part about smoking pot, because when disaster strikes, like your friend goes missing, there's the possibility that important messages and events are lost in the haze. And there's the possibility that you could hallucinate a face in the window when the shot was actually fired from a passing car. In the case of the Mooner, the possibility was a good probability. I drove past Dougie's house to make sure it hadn't burned down while we slept. "Everything looks okay," I said.
"Looks lonely," Mooner said.
When we got back to my apartment, Ziggy Garvey and Benny Colucci were in the kitchen. They each had a mug of coffee and a piece of toast.
"Hope you don't mind," Ziggy said. "We were curious about your new toaster."
Benny gestured with his toast.
"This is excellent toast. See how evenly brown it is, not burned at the edges at all, and it's crisp throughout."
"You should get some jelly," Ziggy said. "Some strawberry jelly would be good on this toast."
"You broke into my apartment again. I hate when you do that."
"You weren't home," Ziggy said. "We didn't want it to look like you had men loitering in your hall."
"Yeah, we didn't want to sully your good name," Benny said. "We didn't think you were that kind of girl, although there's been a lot of rumors throughout the years about you and Joe Morelli. You should be careful of him. He has a very bad reputation."
"Hey, look," Ziggy said. "It's a little fruit. Where's your uniform, kid?"
"Yeah, and what's with the Band-Aid? You fall off your high heels?"
Benny asked. Ziggy and Benny elbowed each other and laughed as if this was some great inside joke. An idea skittered through my head. "You guys wouldn't happen to know anything about the need for the Band-Aid, would you?"
"Not me," Benny said. "Ziggy, you know anything about that?"
"I don't know nothing about it," Ziggy said.
I leant back against the kitchen counter and crossed my arms. "So what are you doing here?"
"We thought we should check in," Ziggy said. "It's been a while since we talked, and we wanted to see if anything new had turned up."
"It's been less than 24 hours, I said.
"Yeah, that's what we said. It's been a while."
"Nothing's turned up."
"Gee, that's too bad," Benny said. "You come so recommended. We had high hopes you could help us."
Ziggy finished his coffee, rinsed the mug in the sink, and set it on the dish drain.
"We should be going now."
"Pig," Mooner said. Ziggy and Benny paused at the door.
"That's a rude thing to say," Ziggy said. "We're going to overlook it because you're Miss Plum's friend."
He looked to Benny for backup.
"That's right," Benny said. "We're going to overlook it. But you should learn some manners. It's not right to talk to old gentlemen like that."
"You called me a fruit," Mooner yelled.
Ziggy and Benny looked at each other perplexed.
"Yeah," Ziggy said. "So?"
"Next time, feel free to loiter in the hall," I said. I closed and locked the door behind Ziggy and Benny. "I want you to think," I said to the Mooner. "Do you have any idea why someone shot at you? Are you sure about the woman's face in your window?"
"I don't know, man. I'm having a hard time thinking. My mind is, like, busy."
"How about strange phone calls?"
"There was just one, but it wasn't all that strange. A woman called up while I was at Dougie's and said she thought I had something that wasn't mine, and I was like, well, yeah."
"Did she say anything else?"
"No. I asked her if she wanted a toaster or a super dude suit, and she hung up."
"Is that all the inventory you've got left? What happened to the cigarettes?"
"Got rid of the cigarettes. I know this real heavy smoker."
It was as if Mooner had been caught in a time warp. I had memories of him in high school looking exactly like this. Long, thin brown hair parted in the middle and tied back into a ponytail. Pale skin, slim build, average height. He was wearing a Hawaiian shirt and jeans that probably had been delivered to Dougie's house under cover of darkness. He'd floated through high school in a grass-induced fog of mellow well-being, talking and giggling through lunch, nodding off in English class. And here he was, still floating through life. No job, no responsibility, Now that I thought about it, it sounded pretty good. Connie usually worked mornings on Saturday. I phoned the office and waited while she got off a call.
That was my Aunt Flo on the line, she said. Remember I told you there was trouble in Richmond when DeChooch was down there? She thinks it's related to Louis D. buying the farm.
Louis D., he's a businessman, right?
He's a real big businessman. Or at least he was. He died of a heart attack while DeChooch was making his pickup.
Maybe it was a bullet that caused the heart attack.
I don't think so. If Louis D. was whacked, we would have heard. That kind of news travels, especially since his sister lives here.
Who's his sister? Do I know her?
Estelle Colucci, Benny Colucci's wife.
Holy shit. Small world. I hung up, and my mother called.
We need to pick out a gown for the wedding, she said.
I'm not wearing a gown.
You should at least look.
Okay, I'll look.
Not.
When? I don't know. I'm busy right now. I'm working.
It's Saturday, my mother said. What kind of a person works on Saturday? You need to relax more. Your grandmother and I will be right over.
No.
Too late. She was gone.
We have to get out of here, I said to Mooner. It's an emergency. We have to leave.
What kind of an emergency? I'm not going to get shot again, am I?
I took the dirty dishes off the counter and threw them into the dishwasher. Then I grabbed Mooner's quilt and pillow and ran into the bedroom with them. My grandmother lived with me for a short while, and I was pretty sure she still had a key to my apartment. God forbid my mother would let herself into my apartment and find it a wreck. The bed was unmade, but I didn't want to take time to make it. I gathered up stray clothes and towels and threw it all in the hamper. I barreled through the living room back to the kitchen, grabbed my bag and my jacket, and yelled at Mooner to get moving. We met my mother and grandmother in the lobby.
Damn.
You didn't have to wait for us in the lobby, my mother said. We would have come up. I'm not waiting for you, I said. I'm on my way out. I'm sorry, but I have to work this morning.
What are you doing? Grandma wanted to know. Are you tracking down some insane killer?
I'm looking for Eddie DeChooch.
I was half right, Grandma said.
You can find Eddie DeChooch some other time, my mother said. I have an appointment for you at Tina's bridal shop.
Yeah, you better take it, Grandma said. We only got this one on account of there was a last-minute cancellation. And besides, we needed an excuse to get out of the house because we couldn't stand any more galloping and whinnying.
I don't want a wedding gown, I said. I want a small wedding.
Or none at all.
Yes, but it doesn't do any harm to look, my mother said.
Tina's bridal shop rocks, Mooner said.
My mother turned to Mooner.
Is this Walter Dunphy? My goodness, I haven't seen you in ages.
Dude, Mooner said to my mother.
Then he and Grandma Mazur did one of those complicated handshakes I could never remember.
We better get a move on, Grandma said. We don't want to be late.
I don't want a gown.
We're just looking, my mother said. We'll only spend a half hour looking and then you can be on your way.
Fine, a half hour. That's it. No more. And we're just looking.
Tina's bridal shop is in the heart of the burg. It occupies half of a red brick duplex. Tina lives in a small apartment upstairs and conducts business in the bottom half of the house. The other half of the duplex is rental property owned by Tina. Tina is known far and wide as being a bitch of a landlady, and the tenants of the rental almost always leave when their year's lease expires. Because rental properties are scarce as hen's teeth in the burg, Tina never has a problem finding hapless victims.
It's you,
Tina said, standing back, eyeballing me.
It's perfect. It's stunning.
I was all decked out in a floor-length satin gown. The bodice had been pinned to fit. The scoop neckline showed just a hint of cleavage, and the full bell skirt had a 4-foot train.
It is lovely, my mother said.
Next time I get married, I might get myself a dress just like that, Grandma said. Or I might go to Vegas and get married in one of them Elvis churches.
Dude, Mooner said. Go for it.
I twisted slightly to better see myself in the three-way mirror. You don't think it's too... white?
Definitely not, Tina said. This is cream. Cream is very different from white.
I did look good in the gown. I looked like Scarlett O'Hara getting ready for a big wedding at Tara. I moved around a little to simulate dancing.
Jump up and down so we can see how it'll look when you do the bunny hop, Grandma said.
It's pretty, but I don't want a gown, I said.
I can order one in her size at no obligation,
Tina said.
No obligation, Grandma said. You can't beat that.
As long as there's no obligation, my mother said. I needed chocolate. A lot of chocolate. Oh, gee, I said. Look at the time. I have to go.
Cool, Mooner said. Are we going to fight crime now? I've been thinking I need a utility belt for my supersuit. I could put all my crime-fighting gear in it.
What crime-fighting gear are you talking about?
I haven't totally thought it through, but I guess things like anti-gravitation socks that would let me walk up the sides of buildings, and a spray that would make me invisible.
You sure your head feels okay where you were shot? You don't have a headache or feel dizzy?
No, I feel fine. Hungry, maybe.
A light rain was falling when Mooner and I left Tina's shop.
That was a total experience, Mooner said. I felt like a bridesmaid.
I wasn't sure what I felt like. I tried bride on for size and found it didn't fit as well as big fat dope. I couldn't believe I let my mother talk me into trying on wedding gowns. What was I thinking? I smacked myself on the forehead with the heel of my hand and grunted.
Dude, Mooner said.
No shit. I turned the key in the ignition and shoved Godsmack into the CD player. I didn't want to think about the wedding fiasco, and there's nothing like metal to wipe your mind clean of anything resembling thought. I pointed the car in the direction of Mooner's house, and by the time we got to Roebling, Mooner and I were doing serious headbanging. We were strumming and flipping hair, and I almost missed the white Cadillac. It was parked in front of Father Caroli's house next to the church. Father Caroli is as old as dirt and has been in the burg for as long as I can remember. It would make sense that he and Eddie DeChooch were friends, and that DeChooch would come to him for counsel. I said a short prayer that DeChooch was inside the house. I could apprehend him there. Inside the church was another matter. There was all that sanctuary stuff to worry about inside the church. And if my mother found out I violated the church, there'd be hell to pay. I walked to Caroli's front door and knocked. No answer. Mooner waded through the shrubs and peered into a window.
Don't see anybody in here, dude.
We both looked to the church.
Drat.
Probably DeChooch was giving confession.
Forgive me, Father, because I snuffed Loretta Ricci.
Okay, I said. Let's try the church.
Maybe I should go home and put my super dude suit on.
Not sure that would be right for church.
Not dressy enough?
I opened the door to the church and squinted into the dim interior. On sunny days, the church glowed with light streaming through the stained glass windows. On rainy days, the church felt bleak and without passion. Today, the only warmth came from a few votive candles flickering in front of the Virgin Mary. The church seemed empty. No mumbling coming from the confessionals. No one at prayer. Just the candles burning and the smell of incense. I was about to leave when I heard someone giggle, the sound coming from the altar area. Hello? I called. Anyone here?
Just us chickens.
It sounded like DeChooch. Mooner and I cautiously walked down the aisle and peeked around the altar. DeChooch and Caroli were sitting on the floor, their backs to the altar, sharing a bottle of red wine. An empty bottle lay on the floor a couple feet away. Mooner gave them a peace sign.
Dude, he said.
Father Caroli pieced him back and repeated the mantra.
Dude.
What do you want? Dechuch asked. Can't you see I'm in church?
You're drinking.
It's medicinal. I'm depressed.
You need to accompany me back to the courthouse so you can get bonded out again, I said to Dechuch.
Dechuch took a long drag on the bottle and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
I'm in church. You can't arrest me in church. God'll be pissed. You'll rot in hell.
It's a commandment, Karoli said.
Mooner smiled.
These guys are shit-faced.
I searched through my bag and came up with cuffs.
Eek, cuffs, Dechuch said. I'm so scared.
I slapped the cuffs on his left wrist and grabbed for his other hand. Dechuch took a 9mm out of his coat pocket, told Karoli to hold the free bracelet, and fired a round off at the chain. Both men yelped when the bullet severed the chain and sent shockwaves up their bony arms.
Hey, I said, those cuffs cost $60.
Dechuch narrowed his eyes and stared at Mooner.
Do I know you?
I'm the Mooner dude. You've seen me at Dougie's house.
Mooner held up two fingers pressed tight together.
Dougie and me are like this. We're a team.
I knew I recognized you, Dechuch said. I hate you and your rotten thieving partner. I should have guessed Krupper wouldn't be in this alone.
Dude, Mooner said.
Dechuch leveled the gun at Mooner.
Think you're smart, don't you? Think you can take advantage of an old man holding out for more money? Is that your angle?
Mooner rapped on his head with his knuckles.
No grass growing here.
I want it now, Dechuch said.
Happy to do business with you, Mooner said. What are we talking about here, toasters or supersuits?
Asshole, Dechuch said,
and he squeezed off a shot that was aimed at Mooner's knee, but missed by about 6 inches and zinged into the floor.
Gripes, Karoli said, hands over his ears. You're gonna make me go deaf. Put the piece away.
I'll put it away after I make him talk, Dechuch said. He's got something that belongs to me.
Dechuch leveled the gun again, and Mooner took off up the aisle at a dead run. In my mind, I was heroic, knocking the gun out of Dechuch's hand. In real time, I was paralyzed. Wave a gun under my nose and everything in my body turns to liquid. Dechuch got off another one that sailed by Mooner and took out a chunk of the baptismal font. Karoli smacked Dechuch in the back of the head with the flat of his hand.
Knock it off!
Dechuch stumbled forward, and the gun discharged and shot a hole in a 4-foot crucifixion painting hanging on the far wall. Our mouths dropped open, and we all made the sign of the cross.
Holy crap! Karoli said. You shot the Jesus. That's gonna take a lot of Hail Marys.
It was an accident, Dechuch said.
He squinted at the painting.
Where did I get him?
Into the knee.
That's a relief, Dechuch said. At least it wasn't no place fatal.
So about your court appearance, I said. I'd take it as a personal favor if you'd go down to the station with me and reschedule.
Boy, you're a real pain in the ass, Dechuch said. How many times do I have to tell you? Forget about it. I'm depressed. I'm not going to go sit in jail when I'm feeling depressed. You ever been in jail?
Not exactly.
Well, take my word for it. It's no place to be when you're depressed. And anyway, there's something I've got to do.
I was sorting through my bag. I had pepper spray in there somewhere, and probably my stun gun.
Besides, there's people looking for me, and they're a lot tougher than you, Dechuch said, and locking me up in jail would make it real easy for them to find me.
I'm tough.
Lady, you're amateur hour, Dechuch said.
I pulled out a can of hairspray, but I couldn't find the pepper spray. I needed better organization. Probably I should put the pepper spray and stun gun in the zipper compartment, but then I'd have to find another place for my gum and mints.
I'm going now, Dechuch said, and I don't want you to follow me or I'll have to shoot you.
Just one question. What did you want from Mooner?
That's private between him and me.
Dechuch left through a side door, and Karoli and I stared after him.
You just let a murderer get away, I said to Karoli. You were sitting here drinking with a murderer.
Nah, Chuchi's no murderer. We go way back. He's got a real good heart.
He tried to shoot Mooner.
He got excited. Ever since that a stroke, he's been excitable like that.
He had a stroke?
Just a small one. Hardly counted at all. I've had worse strokes. Oh, boy.
I caught up with Mooner half a block from his house. He was scooting along, running and walking, looking over his shoulder, doing the Mooner version of a rabbit fleeing the hounds. By the time I parked, Mooner was already through the door, had located a roach, and was lighting up.
People are shooting at you, I said. You shouldn't be smoking dope. Dope makes you stupid, and you need to be smart.
Dude, Mooner said on an exhale.
Yeesh.
I dragged Mooner out of his house and down to Dougie's house. We had a new development here. Dechuch was after something, and he had thought Dougie had it, and now he thinks Mooner's got it.
What was Dechuch talking about? I asked Mooner. What's he after?
I don't know, man, but it's not a toaster.
We were standing in Dougie's living room. Dougie isn't the world's best housekeeper, but the room seemed unusually disrupted. Cushions were askew on the couch, and the coat closet door was open. I stuck my head into the kitchen and found a similar scene. The cabinet doors and counter drawers were open. The door to the cellar was open, and the door to the small pantry was open. I didn't remember things as looking like this last night. I dumped my bag onto the small kitchen table and pawed through the contents, picking out the pepper spray and stun gun. Someone's been in here, I said to Mooner.
Yeah, it happens a lot.
I turned and stared at him.
A lot?
This is the third time this week. I figure someone's looking for our stash, and that old guy, what's with him? He was real friendly with Dougie, coming over to the house a second time and all, and now he's yelling at me. It's, like, confusing, dude.
I stood there with my mouth open and my eyes slightly bulging for several beats.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you telling me Dechuch came back after he delivered the cigarettes?
Yeah, except I didn't know it was Dechuch. I didn't know his name. Dougie and me just called him the old dude. I was here when he dropped the cigs. Dougie called me to help unload the truck, and then he came back to see Dougie a couple days later. I didn't see him the second time. I just know from Dougie telling me.
Mooner took one last drag on the roach.
Boy, talk about a coincidence. Who would have thought you were looking for the old dude?
Mental head slap.
I'm going to check the rest of the house. You stay here. If you hear me scream, call the police.
Am I brave or what?
Actually, I was pretty sure no one was in the house. It had been raining for at least an hour, maybe more, and there were no signs that someone had come in with wet feet. Most likely the house was searched last night after we left.
I flipped the light switch for the cellar and started down the stairs. It was a small house and a small cellar, and I didn't have to go far to see that the cellar had been thoroughly searched and abandoned. I did the second story next and had the same experience. Boxes in the cellar and in the extra bedroom had been ripped open and emptied onto the floor. Clearly, Mooner had no idea what Dechuch was after. Mooner wasn't smart enough to be devious.
Is anything missing? I asked Mooner. Has Dougie ever noticed anything missing after the house is searched?
A rump roast.
Excuse me?
I swear to God, there was a rump roast in the freezer and someone took it. It was a small one, 2.5 pounds. It was left over from a side of beef Dougie happened to come across. You know, fell off a truck. It was all that was left of it. We saved it for ourselves in case we felt like cooking something someday.
I returned to the kitchen and checked out the freezer and refrigerator. ice cream and a frozen pizza in the freezer, Coke and leftover pizza in the refrigerator.
This is a real downer, Moon said. The house doesn't feel right without the Dougster here.
I hated to admit it, but I needed help with Jachuch. I suspected he held the key to Dougie, and he kept walking away from me. Connie was getting ready to close up the office when Mooner and I walked in.
I'm glad you're here, she said. I have an FTA for you, Roseanne Kreiner, businesswoman of the Ho variety. Has her office on the corner of Stark and 12th. Accused of beating the crap out of one of her clients. Guess he didn't want to pay for services rendered. She shouldn't be hard to find. Probably didn't want to give up work time to go to court.
I took the file from Connie and stuffed it into my bag. Hear anything from Ranger?
He delivered his man this morning.
Hooray, Ranger was back. I could get Ranger to help me. I called his number, but there was no answer. I left a message and tried his pager. A moment later, my cell phone rang, and a rush skittered through my stomach. Ranger.
Yo,
Ranger said. I could use some help with an FTA.
What's your problem?
He's old, and I'll look like a loser if I shoot him. I could hear Ranger laughing at the other end.
What's he done?
Everything. It's Eddie Jachuch.
Does you want me to talk to him?
No, I want you to give me some ideas on how to bring him in without killing him. I'm afraid if I zap him with the stun gun, he'll go toes up.
Tag team him with Lula. Bookend him and cuff him.
Already tried that.
He got away from you and Lula? Babe, he must be 80. He can't see. He can't hear. He takes an hour and a half to empty his bladder.
It was complicated.
You could try shooting him in the foot next time, Ranger said. That usually works.
And he severed the connection. Great. I called Morelli next.
I've got news for you, Morelli said. I ran into Costanza when I went out for the paper. He said the autopsy report came in on Loretta Ricci, and she died of a heart attack.
And then she was shot?
You got it, Cupcake.
Too weird. I know this is your day off, but I was wondering if you'd do me a favor, I said to Morelli.
Oh, boy.
I was hoping you'd babysit Mooner. He's tied up in this Jachuch mess, and I don't know if it's safe to leave him alone in my apartment.
Bob and I are all set to watch the game. We've been planning this all week.
Mooner can watch it with you. I'll drop him off. I hung up before Morelli could say no. Roseanne Kreiner was standing on her corner in the rain looking totally wet and pissed off. If I was a guy, I wouldn't let her within 20 feet of my wanger. She was dressed in high-heeled boots and a black garbage bag. It was hard to tell what she was wearing under the bag. Maybe nothing. She was pacing and waving at passing cars, and when the cars didn't stop, she'd give them the finger. Her arrest sheet said she was 52. I pulled to the curb and rolled my window down. Do you do women?
Honey, I do pigs, cows, ducks, and women. You got the dime, I put in my time. 20 for a hand thing. You go into overtime if you take all day.
I showed her a 20, and she got into the car. I hit the auto door locks and took off for the police station.
Any side street will do, she said.
I have a confession.
Oh, shit, are you a cop? Tell me you're not a cop.
I'm not a cop. I'm bond enforcement. You missed your court date and you have to reschedule.
Do I get to keep the 20?
Yeah, you can keep the 20.
Do you want a diddle for it?
No!
Geez, no need to yell. I just didn't want you to feel cheated. I give people their money's worth.
How about the guy you clocked?
He tried to stiff me. You think I'm out there on that corner for my health? I got a mother in assisted living. I don't make the monthly payment, and she's living with me.
Would that be so bad?
I'd rather fuck a rhino.
I parked in the police lot, reached over to cuff her, and she started waving her hands around.
You're not gonna cuff me, she was saying. No way.
And then somehow, with all the hand-waving and struggling, the automatic door lock got popped, and Roseanne jumped out of the car and ran for the street. She had a head start, but she was in heels and I was in cross trainers, and I caught her after a two-block chase. Neither of us was in good shape. She was wheezing, and I felt like I was breathing in fire. I clapped the bracelets on her, and she sat down.
"No sitting," I said. "Tough. I'm not going anywhere."
I'd left my bag in the car, and the car looked a long way off. If I ran back to the car to get my cell phone, Roseanne wouldn't be here when I returned. She was sitting, sulking, and I was standing, fuming. Some days it didn't pay to get out of bed. I had a really strong urge to give her a good kick in the kidney, but that'd probably leave a bruise, and then she might sue Vinny for bounty hunter brutality. Vinny hated when that happened. It was raining harder, and we were both soaked. My hair was stuck to my face, and my Levi's were drenched. The two of us settled in for a standoff. The standoff ended when Eddie Gazzara drove by on his way to lunch. Eddie's a Trenton cop, and he's married to my cousin, Shirley the Whiner. Eddie rolled his window down, shook his head, and made sounds.
"I've got a situation with an FTA, I said to Eddie.
Eddie grinned.
"No shit,"